Can I encourage you to separate yourself from it? Separate yourself from that. We spoke the other week. When you attempt to change things, some people will not stay. Sometimes they take others with them. I've experienced that. At a time when we were making some changes in the previous church I was involved in leading, some people didn't like the direction in which we were going, so they went. And they took a number of people with them. It's at that point you do wonder whether you've heard from God. But sometimes you have to stick to that. Stick to your convictions. And I said last time, the truth is that I cannot lead this church in the way this church has been led in the past. You see, it's a little bit like David and Saul over the issue of Goliath, where David was given Saul's armor. And David said, well, thank you very much. Very nice. Doesn't fit. I can't do it like this. I have to do it the way I do it. So for David, it was a slingshot. So for me, it's different. I'm a different character. But when I look back at all the leaders of this church, we're all different. But I can't wear that jacket. I have to wear my jacket. And whoever comes after me will have to wear their jacket, not my jacket. You get it? But I really believe that for us as a church, that God is calling us to wear a bigger jacket. Something that we can grow into. And I have to grow into something as well. You know, I haven't come here to rebuild a church that I was leading. This is Hope Church. This is a different church with different people, different circumstances, different experiences. Same God. And of course I will bring some things that I've been involved in the past. It's part of me. But I hope that I'm not just the type of person who just wants to repeat everything. That's why I have a great team of leaders around me who speak into my life and we speak into each other's lives. We have an opportunity to talk to each other, to listen to each other, to grow together. Because that's what we have to do. And again, I said a couple of weeks back, we have to understand that this church, Moses is dead. Now, some of you think that when I talk about Moses is dead, I'm referring to Jill. Those of you who don't know, Jill was my wife. Jill died in June last year. And so quite often people say to me, you're speaking about Jill. No, I'm not. I'm talking about Moses. If it was about Jill, I'd say Jill is dead. So it's Moses. It's the whole thinking around that Moses attitude. And God is calling us to be in a Joshua attitude. It's different. And so we are moving into a different world for this church. Do you understand what I'm saying? Right? Please don't think that I'm harking back to the past. I'm not. But some of you are holding on to that and thinking that's what he's talking about. No. God has specifically told us to cross over. And so if you remember about the story, Moses could never cross over. It had to be Joshua. Moses was fantastic. What Moses did was amazing. But that was Moses' time. And then God said, I need you to cross over. Moses, you can see the promised land, but you're not going to walk in it. Now, that must have been hard for Moses. I get that. And when Moses saw what was ahead, there must have been something in him that thought, I wish I was going too. But I think God was saying to Moses, Moses, you've been brilliant. You've led 3 million people out. You've led them for over 40 years. You thought you were going to just lead sheep, but you wouldn't. You're not. You were leading people. You came up onto the mountain. You received the Ten Commandments. You put structure into place. You put infrastructure in. But Moses, that was your time. Now it's the time for Joshua. You've trained Joshua. You've done a great job with Joshua. Let him go. Just like when Moses said to Pharaoh, "Let my people go." And here is God saying to Moses, "Let Joshua go. And let him cross over. Let him take the people into the next part of the promise." I think that's amazing. I think that's for us. These are not in my notes. This is very disconcerting. We talked about the type of church we don't want. And I'm not going to go over that. Because I think I said quite a lot. But I will say this. All of us need to give ourselves to building this irresistible church, against which the gates of hell will not prevail. It's very interesting. This morning when we were praying in the back room, you know, Joe brought a really good word about no weapon formed against us will prosper, and had this picture of us being like the Roman soldiers with all their shields above us and at the sides of us. If any of you saw Risen the other week when we showed that, you know, may remember what it looked like, a tortoise, where they were protected on all sides. And that's something about us as a church as we go into this new venture, this thing about they devoted themselves. That whole thing is around that we actually do that. We put up our shields and protect each other. This isn't about protecting you, it's protecting each other. So in Isaiah 54:2, at the beginning of the year, God said this to us: reject a small-minded view of him. It's all contained in those verses. I'm not going to go through them all. It's very interesting that in this whole story, going back to Moses, when a group of leaders went into the promised land and they saw the promised land. And it was Joshua and Caleb, and they saw this place of enlargement before them. But everybody else who was with them shrunk back and stayed small. When Joshua and Caleb believed it could be done, but the rest said they were afraid to try, and they remained small-minded and remained in the wilderness for a further 40 years. How sad. How sad was that? That Moses listened to the 10 and not to the 2. But it's fascinating. The 40 years on, both Joshua and Caleb walked into Canaan. God preserved them both, and they both walked in. Joshua obviously leading the people, and Caleb close by him. So God was saying to us, don't be small-minded in your thinking. Don't be small-minded in the way you perceive God. He also told us to enlarge the place of our tent. And what does that mean? It means make room. Now here, we believe it's about making room for the whosoever. Why tents need longer cords to keep them in place, don't they? But lengthening cords also means strengthening stakes. So at the beginning of the year, God said he was going to he promised to expand and stretch us, lengthen us and strengthen us to achieve what? Why would God do that? To achieve his purpose, not our purpose. You see, too many church leaders have spent their lives trying to get their people devoted. They've preached about being committed, about being a disciple. They pray for people to grow in faith. They visit people who haven't been to church for a while to try and encourage them to come back. And they try to follow up new Christians to make sure they grow. It's all great stuff. But having done that myself, I realized over many years, I can't actually devote anyone except me. You have to devote yourselves. I can't do it for you. I wish I could, but I can't. Truth is, people like me can't force or manipulate anyone into being more devoted. To serving God, to sharing Him with others, it has to come from within you. So we can talk to you till the cows come home about this Festival of Hope and being an Andrew and all the rest of it, which is fantastic, but unless you pick it up and run with it, I can't do it for you. I'd like to. There's a few things I'd like to do. But I can't. See, what I can do is this. I can go, hey, John. Now, John, you see what he did there? He put his hand out. Now, I can't make him do that. Well, I could. No. I can't make him do that. And if I try and pull him up, I'm trying to do that. But if he gets up himself, notice the cue. Hiya, mate. There. See, there's something about that. You're going to get frightened now because you wouldn't, where am I going? It's all right, Rochelle. Panic not. People hate it when I do this. What are you smiling at, Harvey? Am I coming to you? I might have a word for you. Oh, thank you. I'm not boring. I'm quite fun. You can come again next week. Thing is this. This devotion. Anybody know what it means? Anybody want to guess? What does being devoted mean? Yeah. Thank you. All right, that's really good. Anything else? Sorry? Giving everything. Committed. Some of us should be committed. Right, go on. Passion. Nice one. Passionate. It's very interesting. Paul talks about stuff like this in his epistles about love. It's about love is everything. It's your underwear. That's what Paul basically says. Let love be everything. Put on love. Regardless of anything else, put on love. It's your all-purpose garment. When I was a kid, my mum used to say to me, don't go out without your vest on. Now you think, why? Because it keeps you warm. And there's something about love, that wearing love keeps you warm and keeps other people warm too. Somebody needs to hear that this morning. You see, that's why we bang on so much about each of us being responsible for our own walk with God. It's easy, it's very easy to blame other people or the church for why we aren't living as the kind of Christians we know we should be. It's easy to make the responsibility somebody else's and not mine. But here's the point. We are as committed to Jesus as we choose to be. I am as devoted as I choose to be, and you are as devoted as you have chosen to be. That's the truth of it. There's a story that Paul Scanlon talks about of a pastor and his wife who, after 20 years of ministry, resigned and they became pub owners because 20 years of ministry had put him and his wife on medication. He described the church where he felt totally responsible to persuade people to get involved, but they refused. He became worn out from the effort to convince and persuade, remind, and often beg people to get behind the vision, but they wouldn't. So why did he like his new career? And this is what he said. My drinkers are devoted all by themselves. I never have to persuade them to come back. I never have to call them to come. I never have to persuade them to part with their money. My drinkers come early and stay late. My drinkers come early and stay late. Isn't it sad that somebody who had 20-odd years in leadership and was on medication trying to get people to do things changes career and enjoys it. No. Not yet. I've always wanted to open a pub. Anyway. So. Yes, sir. Could be. It could be. In fact, it might have been. In fact, it might have been boring. I don't know. Don't get up and go. I think the point is, and in the context, is that quite often, this is what happens as a church. We're always trying to get people involved with stuff. And the point is, if you haven't got the passion for it yourself, no matter what I say, I could talk to you till I was blue in the face. If you are not prepared to make that choice and move into that yourself, that's the whole point. They devoted themselves. You know, because when you look at that in Acts, who devoted themselves? Who were we talking about here? They were talking about the 3,000 that were added to the church. They devoted themselves. You see, these were incredible words in Acts 2:42, words spoken about the emerging church community. And I know Scanlon talks about this a lot, and Paul Scanlon has been a big influence on my life. But it's true, if you think about it, we always skip by, don't we, those words. They devoted themselves to blah, 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 blah. And we go for the blah, 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 but we never really consider they devoted themselves. Because it seems to me that it was a key to health and vitality in that early church. Those three words, if you like, seem to be the bedrock of the early church. They seem to describe the caliber of those people and the culture they created. And maybe that's why I go on so much about the type of church I desire to see God build. One which is a self-devoted and responsibility-taking church, one that you feel inspired and motivated, and that can't just come from us as a leadership team. We can be motivated, but if you're not motivated, you don't see those things as well, then there's a disconnect, it seems to me. So this devotion springs from within us, not from a program. This is the whole thing about inside out thinking, seeing, believing. Because God promises to change us from the inside out. And so if God is changing us from the inside out, then it seems logical to me that there will be a passion within us to see that personal transformation take place? Is it just me? Is that the same for you? Sorry, I'm just asking, I'm going to ask a few of you now. Is that the same for you? Speak. Is that the same for you? You want to preach? It's true, isn't it? It's interesting. Just a question. They were. Take him outside. We'll kill him. I think it's really interesting, this whole thing. There was something springing up from inside them. They devoted themselves. So in the roots of the early church, this devotion, this passion, this motivation, this commitment for life came from the people. Interesting, isn't it? They came from the people. It wasn't something that the leaders were imposing upon people. The trouble is that 2,000 years later, it seems that some of this devotion has been transferred to leaders. And now leaders spend large amounts of time trying to motivate, energize, and encourage people to own the vision, to turn up, to serve, to give, to support, to commit. Is that the same in your church? Ish. Don't look at me like that. It's really interesting. Because when I read the Bible, I don't see Jesus chasing people. That's true. People chased after him. I don't see Jesus and the disciples sitting down and making a list of who used to follow him, who haven't been around for a while. I don't see him doing that. But what I do see are people chasing after him. What I do see are the crowds interested in him. Might have had all sorts of reasons for that. But it was very interesting, isn't it? It's the other way round, that people were interested in Jesus and who he was, what he said, how he reacted, how radical he was. Even the 12 disciples saw something in Jesus that they hadn't seen anybody else. Where else can we go? You alone have the words of eternal life. I think it's true, Dave, that a lot of those early disciples saw something in Jesus that they wanted to grab hold of, to be part of, to share in. I lived with him for nearly 3 years. Truth is that Jesus set the bar high. He demanded total commitment and radical self-sacrifice to be his follower. It was all or nothing. And if people walked away from him, he just shrugged his shoulders and moved on. That's how Jesus would do that. Because Jesus recognized that people had choice. When I thought about this, it seems to me that the only people we, the church, actually are meant to go after and pursue are the lost, not Christians. Interesting, isn't it? Not Christians. Sadly, people like me often waste so much time chasing undevoted Christians that we neglect what is most central to God's heart. That's why the Festival of Hope is important for us as a church. That's why everything we do, our connection with the community, our growing engagement with the community, it's about being relational with people, being authentic, living out our faith in a different way that grows us, that transforms us from the inside out, that changes us, changes the way we see people and the way we see God. That's why we talk so much in this church about vision and values, because it's the way we see the world. Our vision and values are based upon the way we see the world. If we see the world through God's eyes, it's a world of compassion, that the world is has a purpose, that there's intention. So our core values are based around how we see that world. And that out of that flows the vision to become an irresistible church. But we can bang on about it as much as we like at the front, but unless you believe that you want to be part of an irresistible church that changes lives, to see other people's lives transformed, whether they come to faith or not, that's a big one for some of us, because some people may not come to faith. Our passion is that they will, but they may not. So does that stop us? It shouldn't stop us, I don't believe. But if I've devoted myself to God, then I have to believe that when God places me in different positions, whether it's in work or whether it's in relationships, wherever God places me, then if I'm devoted to Him, I'm hopeful that what's inside me actually is demonstrated with somebody else. That's a better word. You can preach next week. Rubs off. Yeah. Rubs off. Instead of rubbing up. Because a lot of us do rub up people. Sometimes the right way, sometimes the wrong way. What if? Just dream with me a minute. What if people actually had their own route themselves into God instead of putting their straw into somebody else's relationship, drinking from somebody else's relationship? That's what people do, isn't it? It's like, oh, can I have some of what you've got? I'll put my straw into you, suck you dry. Because that's what happens sometimes, isn't it? People want to suck us dry. What about sucking your own straw with God? It's a bit of a picture, isn't it? What if we said, now you're a Christian, you will want to give. You will want to pray. You will want to learn. Instead of, now you're a Christian, you have to give. You have to pray. You have to learn. You have to be a disciple. See the difference? You will want to give. We have this conversation, don't we? We move from you have to what if we did this? You will want to give. You'll want, it's normal, it's natural. You'd want to do this. So when Zoe goes out, quite often I'll say to her, have you got any money? And quite often the response will be no. So, being the generous person I am, take this with you. And if you don't use it today, you can use it tomorrow
or the day after. Anybody else do that? So why do I do that? Am I trying to get brownie points? Who said yes? You don't get brownie points. But what you do, I want to give to her. I don't have to. I want to. I choose to. Why? Because I want her to be able to experience something that perhaps if she didn't have that, she couldn't. I'm not trying to manipulate something with her. I just want her to enjoy having that experience, whatever that is. So it's my choice to give. Let me ask you the question this morning. Is there a divine devotion within you? Do you want to give, to be, to do? Or are we as leaders here more devoted to making you devoted? I want to see people who are empowered to express their devotion both inside and outside the church. That's my dream. Shifting from have to want to. That's what I believe they devoted themselves means. Moving away from you have to do this to you want to do this. So when we talk about community engagement, it's not because we feel we have to. We want to. When we talk about life groups, we're not doing life groups because we have to, we want to. So if you want to be part of a life group, there's a difference. It's not about you have to be. I would love everyone in the church to be part of a life group because I think it helps you to do life together. But I can't force you to do that. You have to want to do that. Right? I can't even force you to come to church. Well, I could. But why would I force you to come to church? You have to want to come, want to be here, want to share with other people these experiences, not living off somebody else's experience. People often say to me, you know, oh, I missed church this week. What was it like? As there are some reasons why people that happens to them. But, you know, sometimes it's like, well, you missed it. It was awesome, but it would have been even more awesome if you'd been there. So we're changing it around, a different perspective, because what we do is we go, well, you weren't there, were you? But like, we missed you. We missed you being there. See, the thing is, like, if I'm apart from the girls, it feels as though something is missing from me. I want to be with them. Whether they want to be with me is another story. But there's something that misses. There's some disconnect. And I guess that's it. If John's not here on a Sunday, I miss him. Right? If Gary and Rochelle aren't here, I miss them. Not because they're part of the leadership team, but because they're people that I care about. So if Jerry and Elaine aren't here, I miss them. So if you're not here, I miss you. So I don't go, you have to be there on Sunday. So we're not saying to you, you have to get involved in the Festival of Hope. But we'd love you to. Because together, actually, we can do more than we can on our own. And maybe that's part of this whole thing about devoting ourselves to. My biggest concern as a church leader, I have many. What I don't want us to do in this church is to teach people that we are devoted for them. We can't do that. Can't do it. But often we're in danger of doing that. We want to empower you to be who you are. That's why we go on so much about valuing people for who they are. Right? That's a real, it's such a part of us as a church, isn't it? You know, so when we are involved in stuff, it's not the doing that I'm looking for. It's who you are that's more important to me. Because I really believe that what you do flows out of who you are. And so if we can encourage you to be the best you that you can be, not trying to be me or Gary or Rochelle, Joe, we're not trying to clone you. We want you to be you. And so some of the stuff that we put on as a church is about encouraging you to be you, not becoming like me. So when we talk about doing this process in the next few weeks around Catalyst, and you're thinking, what's it about? Well, come and find out. We would love you to come and find out. I'm not saying you have to, but come and find out. Our life groups have to be about life. They have to be life-giving, not life-taking. This isn't making sense. I'm looking at your faces and I'm thinking, oh dear. I can't get away from this. I can't. See, we as leaders, we try and make you do things, don't we? We do. We try hard not to. But sometimes we do. I would really love it if you could be who you are called to be. Because that's who God's called me to be. Me. People say to me, oh, you're the pastor. No, I'm not. I'm Steve. I'm Steve. Being a pastor is what I do. It comes out of who I am. So I'm a person first, not a role. And each of you are people first. You're not a role. And some of us don't know who we are. We don't know our identity. And I understand that. And maybe part of the things that we can help you with is help you discover what your identity is in God, or your identity is, so that you can become devoted to whatever that plan and purpose is for your life. That's what my passion is, to see you become devoted to who God is calling you to be. I said to the leadership team, my job now is to grow you into who God is calling you to be. Now, does that mean that we agree on everything? No, we don't. But it would be wrong of me to turn you all into clones. So you have to be who you are. And it may be that in discovering actually who you are, that the passions that you have start to show themselves and are allowed to show themselves. And it may be that in here that there are dreams that are yet unfulfilled. Wouldn't it be fantastic if you were part of a church where the dreams that you have inside you that nobody else apart from God and you know could actually begin to be realized amongst a group of people like this who actually don't push you down because of the dreams that you have but actually try and lift you up? Isn't that what church is supposed to be about, where we lift people up rather than push people down? I've seen it too many times where we push people down. Now, of course, you know, we have a particular vision here. We have particular values. And so what I would say to people, so how does the vision that God has given you, how does it connect with the vision of this church? Doesn't mean that you can't be involved, but we are going in a particular direction. So how does what God has given you fit with that? And maybe we need to recalibrate some stuff.
Because this whole thing, this broad stroke, an irresistible, attractive church, what does that look like? And it may be that what's inside you actually adds to that, multiplies it, brings something else into the pit. The pit? Brings something else in. Because I'm telling you now, if there's 70 of you here this morning, you all have a dream. Every one of you has a dream. And for some of you, it's buried really, really down because people have pushed you down so many times and said to you, that will never happen. You can't do that. You're useless. Give up. I'd rather us be a church saying, do you know what? Everything's possible. Because that's what God says. Anything is possible. All things are possible. That's right, Lee. All things are possible. Maybe not beneficial, but all things are possible. Please hear my heart this morning. It is our responsibility as a leadership team to provide information and support, but it's not our responsibility to continually chase after people. Surely, if people have been touched by God, they will want to be with other Christians. Surely. And maybe they want to be in church. I think my passion is to see a church with a responsibility taking culture. You know, too often we hear the 80-20 stuff where 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Somehow that doesn't seem fair. I'd rather see 80% of the people doing stuff. Make my job a lot easier. It's not about making my job easy. I find it really hard because I guess I've always been passionate about the things of God. As I said at the beginning, we're coming to a close. Always been passionate about the things of God and about God himself and chasing after God and wanting to learn more of him and growing in my relationship with him. Maybe for me it is about trying to see the world through God's eyes. Maybe that's why being relational and being spiritual and generous, doing things well, maybe that flows from my personal vision. I guess it's always been in me to be part of building an authentic, irresistible church that empowers people to thrive and flourish. I think that's in me. My question is, what's in you? What's in you? What's God put in you? And how can you devote yourself to that? How do you devote yourself to that? Do you devote yourself to that? Four questions. Let's stand. Please. Let me ask you some stuff this morning now, as we come to a close.
Let's just bow our heads. You know, it's not easy talking about stuff like this morning and listening to it, because it's challenging, and I know that. But I'd like you to consider this prayerfully now. This is just between you and God. Let me ask you a question. Who are you most devoted to today? Who are you most devoted to today? You know, Jesus speaks of, you know, where your heart is, that's where your treasure will be. Where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be. So who are you most devoted to today? Maybe the person you stood next to. That's okay. Who are you devoted to? It may be God. That's okay. Because it seems to me that who you're devoted to, from that flows out what you're devoted to. So you need to ask yourself the second question. What are you devoted to this morning? And don't think just because I'm speaking from the front. You know, this is between you and God. God is here by his power and presence this morning. I can sense it all over this room. So this is between you. It's almost like God is stood next to you and say, okay, well, who are you devoted to? God's not going to shout at you. But just ask yourself the question. Who are you devoted to? And what are you devoted to today? And then I will ask you this question. So how many of those things that you're devoted to, the people that you're devoted to, are God things and God connections? How many of those are that? And then maybe the third question is, how many of those people and things that you're devoted to, how many of them are kingdom centered? How many are kingdom centered? And finally, big one, and only you can answer that. Have you devoted yourself fully to Jesus? Have I devoted myself fully to Jesus? And what might that look like? What might that look like for you?